Beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, so thrilled once again to be your host and to bring more value to your life. You know, we've made a commitment to help in any possible way we can, to lift stress, to inspire people to healthier, wealthier, more positive, happy living, so that we can get our needs met, so we can make this planet a planet where it works for everyone. And we've got to have some ways to deal with some important aspects of our lives. So we're getting ready for an amazing guest today. And before we get started, just want to remind you, our program is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com, which brings you the wonderful Comfort Clock. And those of you that may have heard of Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for the Soul books, The Star of the Secret, or Reverend Michael Beckwith, another Star of the Secret, these and other doctors and celebrities are big fans of this Comfort Clock. You plug it in, it relieves stress, harmonizes energies, and makes your life better. And today, we are so blessed and fortunate to have a wonderful guest, Hank Feiger. Hank has been working for many, many years helping executives all over the planet. I mean, he's been doing this for more than 30 years in 20 countries. He's trained executives, companies like IBM, Apple, AT&T, Yves Saint Laurent, Adobe, and he trains executives to access their inner resources, and I love this one, to get out of their own way so that they can develop the skills they must have to succeed. What kind of skills? Well, things that you know you need in your families. We have to have personal leadership. We have to have communication skills, team building skills, and of course, presentation skills. We don't seem to talk in these terms in families, but you got something point to get across. You've got to present this properly. And he's the author of a wonderful book, Behavior Change, A View from the Inside Out. And I don't know if that meant, I hope that didn't mean he was locked up. You know, I don't think that is. I think that's our inner resources. And Hank sees behaviors as the end result of a long chain of internal events. So we're going to kind of pick his brain, so to speak, kind of tap into this wonderful individual's resources to see how we can get some hints and helpful things that we can make our lives better. Now, typically, he's an executive coach. So people have turned to him mostly for business. But today we're going to apply these wonderful skills that he has, of course, yes, to business if we want, because many people are entrepreneurial and they're doing home-based business or small businesses. But get ready. We're going to welcome Mr. Feiger here. Hank, hello, hello. Welcome aboard.
Welcome. Thanks, Kenneth. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And now I want to, because I'm just getting acquainted, I may have left something out of some of your background. Is there something else you wanted to add in about your skill base that our listeners should know?
Well, I think you covered it quite well. I really appreciated that introduction. What I would add is that As you mentioned, I have been doing it for over 30 years, and I had the privilege to be trained as a coach. I was first introduced to the world of coaching by Tim Galway, the renowned author of The Inner Game of Tennis and Inner Skiing, The Inner Game of Golf. And Tim, back in 1976, basically asked me to help him build a learning organization with the success of his books. And he was kind enough and thoughtful enough to introduce me to how people learn. And so that's where I first started to realize that there's something inside of us that, if we access it, makes learning easier, makes performing easier, and in general makes our lives easier.
Oh boy, do we ever need that. Well, this is our lucky day, Hank. I know there's some people that like to listen and look on the internet. Is it okay to give your website so people can check that out if they want to while we're doing this interview?
Please.
Okay.
Yes.
At www.hankfieger, that's HANKFIEGER.com.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Oh, you're welcome. We want to have people be able to get access to as many resources as they can. Now, since you've worked with so many executives, can you help with what you might say are some of the key skills that every successful executive must possess?
Yes, with pleasure. It's and as you said in your introduction, I think that as I talk about some of the executive skills, there is a clear crossover into all of our lives. And one of the things that I've realized is that the world needs leaders now more than ever, and organizations need leaders now, our communities need leaders now, and as you touched on it, our families need leaders now more than ever.
Yeah.
And some of the skills, that I think are really required are the ability to both have a clear vision of, you know, what one wants to offer to an organization or what one wants to offer to our community in service or to a family. So what we call in the business world is having a clear vision. In other words, you know, what is it that I need people to do, and where do I see this organization or this family or this community moving to in the future? But the second key skill, and I think this is very, very important, is to learn how to communicate that to the hearts and the minds of the followers.
Mm.
And too many leaders these days, you know, have an idea or they think they know where things need to go in the business world, but they don't really communicate it in a way so that people will follow. And I think we're even seeing that now, you know, with the economic state of the world and specifically here in the States, and how people are frightened and fear-based and not really trusting the leaders and not quite sure what's, you know, how it's going to affect them personally.
Yeah. Wow. That is a key point. And so this is something you've been helping leaders of these major corporations for many years to be more effective, as you say, communicating a vision and I guess beyond a vision, but really being able to get their point across to people.
Exactly. And that's where, as you mentioned, where the idea of being able to present their vision, to be able to work with teams, to communicate to large groups of people, and to communicate one-on-one with an employee. So my specialty and my real area of expertise as an executive coach has been in the area of interpersonal skills, the people side of business, communicating. And it's interesting, Kenneth, because as you mentioned, some of my clients, what people may realize is a lot of them are in the information technology world, the IBM and Microsoft and AT&T and Adobe. And what you have now is you have engineers that are essentially in very high levels of management and in leadership roles. And engineers typically, and financial individuals typically, were trained in how to fix problems, how to work with numbers. and they generally have not been trained in how to communicate with other people. And so as they move up their corporate ladder and they become in positions of greater responsibility, they need help in learning how to communicate. And so that's where people like me are able to come into corporations and teach them, coach them, guide them.
Ah, wow. Well, this is huge. Now, I'm just wondering, this is a kind of a bit of an off-the-wall question, perhaps, but today's world, we're seeing a difference of younger people seeming to have some more sophistication. They've grown up with information. Some people have been working with computers. They're in their teens, their early 20s, and they've been working with information technology since they were 4, 5, 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have some tremendous skills. What I wonder about, because I think this could apply both to families and in businesses, when you're dealing with teenagers or young adults who may have some tremendous skills, but I'm wondering, they may not necessarily have some of the emotional maturity because in some ways they may still be emotionally young. I don't know if that's a topic that you can shed any light on.
I would like to at least acknowledge that, Kenneth, because I think you're pointing something out that's very, very important. That there was a book many years ago, I think it was at the end of the 80s, called Megatrends by a gentleman named John Nesbitt.
Okay.
Essentially kind of future casting, you know, talking about what were the trends that were coming in terms of the 90s and now that we're well into, you know, 2009. And one of the trends was what he referred to as high tech, high touch. And what he said was is that the more technologically oriented that we become, the greater the need for us to continue to have human touch.
Mm.
Because more and more of us spend an inordinate amount of time, so many hours behind our computer, in front of the screen. And as you said, the young people are spending a tremendous amount of time. They're so savvy with technology. And yet, they're spending less time socially with each other. Instead, they're texting each other. You know, they're instant messaging each other. And they've even created a new language, like the text language, which is a form of shorthand. And so there's been a disconnect or a gap, and they don't really spend as much time face-to-face in each other's presence. And so what you've just acknowledged is something that Daniel Goleman wrote about when he talked about emotional intelligence, and that possibly emotional intelligence is as important, if not more important, than what we've been always measuring, which is the, you know, intelligence quota or the intelligence quotient and how bright someone is. But the ability to succeed really has to do with working with other people. How do you get results with and through other people? And as you say, whether it be in a family and getting a family to function really well or in an organization. And so I think emotional intelligence is something that as a society we need to focus more on. We need to understand what really constitutes emotional intelligence. And in my understanding, if I could simplify it for you and your listeners,
yes,
is that emotional intelligence essentially is, one, developing greater self-awareness. So understanding yourself, knowing what you're thinking, knowing what you're feeling, being in touch with oneself. The second component is the ability then to be aware of another person. What are they feeling right in this moment? What are they thinking? How do they function differently than myself? And the third component is learning communication skills, which then can bridge the gap between me and between another.
Ah, okay. Well, those are important points.
So I think the first step really, and I think it's really what, you know, my understanding of what your work is about and your gift to the world and some of the people that you've had on your show. It's really about increasing self-awareness. Because I can only be in, you know, I can only be aware of you to the degree that I'm aware of myself.
Yes.
So if I haven't looked into myself and if I'm not aware of how I function, it's going to make it that much more difficult for me to understand how you function, meaning the other person I'm working with.
Now, does some of that tie into to this idea of learning from the inside out?
It's I appreciate the it's a wonderful, you know, connection. It is exactly that, and the reason why I wrote the book, even though I'm an executive coach, was I realized that what I was working with executives to help them to improve their skills, to continue to learn no matter what stage of life that they were at, is that what I was touching upon and creating lasting change in one's life was really applicable to all people in all walks of life, whether they be business leaders, whether they be teachers or therapists or coaches or just, you know, individuals in life. Is that there is something going on inside. There is what I refer to as our internal operating system. And this is the kind of connection to the technology world. And as you mentioned in the introduction, is that behavior is just a result of that. And so I was hoping to introduce people in a very simple way to help them understand what makes them tick. How do they function? Why do we have habits? Why do we repeat certain things in our life, even when we recognize this is probably not the best way for me to do this? But changing a habit or changing behavior can be a difficult thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That when you can shine some light on that for myself and our listeners, you're doing us a great service there, Hank.
Well, I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Now, I can tell just from some of the lightness in your voice that you like to use a term that says that you're an edutainer. And
yes.
Can you give us a little bit of what that means and how you use it so that we can maybe pick up on some of that for our own lives?
Sure. I think that when those of us that want to educate, see that we have something to share, that we, you know, we like the learning process. What I've realized is that as an educator, that in order to keep others engaged, especially adults, to keep adults engaged, if it's just content, if it's just information that we're giving, It's difficult. People have, whether we like it or not, our attention spans have become shorter and shorter. And we live in a world where there's just so much information and there's so much coming towards us that to hold our attention is a challenge. And so this aspect of entertaining, so if I thought about how could we blend education with entertainment, which is where the word edutaining comes from, and do it in a way that keeps people interested, that keeps people engaged. And so whether it be the lightness of one's voice, whether it be the fluidity of one's body language, whether it be the use of humor occasionally, is to make learning an enjoyable experience rather than a dry or even painful experience.
Ah, okay. I wish you would have been talking to some of the teachers that I had when I went to school.
And mine as well. One of the things that in an earlier edition of my life from the mid-80s, I had the opportunity to teach film acting in Los Angeles for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was trained as a film actor, but I realized that early on I probably wasn't cut out for the work of going out and selling oneself And it's, as I'm sure you are aware of or know of some in the business, it's a very difficult thing. So I was given the opportunity to teach. And because I was working with Tim Galloway and I was using this inner game approach, an acting coach of mine recognized that and he asked me if I would substitute some classes. And the reason why I'm sharing this with you and the listeners is that because I have that as a background, I was able to bring that into the workshops and in the seminars and the sessions that I do with corporate executives and with managers. And so it is an aspect of entertaining. It is an aspect of performing.
Wow.
And it,
wow.
You know, it makes it more interesting for me. But clearly it makes it more interesting for those that have to go through training programs or coaching sessions or workshops.
Yes. I know sometimes when I get a little serious, I carry with me, especially driving, because sometimes driving in traffic, stress builds and people are more rushed. Driving can be a bit of an adventure, and so I keep with me one of these little red clown noses, so that I can when someone pulls a stunt on me in traffic, and it's bound to happen. We're out there, people are in a hurry, and they've just got to do what they got to do, but sometimes we don't like it, and so when I start thinking of words, I put on that little nose and I look, I change the mirror so I can see myself and I go, ah, there's another clown out there on the road. And it kind of helps me change my mood a little bit.
Yes, so it sounds like you've developed a way for yourself to shift, you know, to make a change when you've realized that you're getting stressed or you're getting, you know, upset with the situation you find yourself in. So that's an excellent technique.
Now, I'm just kind of curious, as I'm beginning to get acquainted with your book, and by the way, is it out on the press, or how do we get a hold of your new book?
Thanks for asking. It's on Amazon at now, and it, in fact, Amazon started shipping about a week ago. The actual publication date is April 1st, so it'll be in people's local bookstores as of April 1st.
Okay, good. If I'm understanding, there's some practical advice. This was one of the things that was so intriguing because you got a wonderful endorsement from Tim Galloway, and I remember studying with him up at a training camp at Windstars, a thing that John Denver put together in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And he was there with Tony Robbins and with Tom Crum, and telling his story about how he would distract an individual when they were under pressure to be able to help them to relax more and accomplish a task like hit a good backhand shot in tennis.
Correct.
Having him, you know, endorsing your work and making mention that you have in your book not just good advice, look both ways before crossing the street, that's good advice, but other helpful things like life is what you make it, or don't take things too seriously. Those are other pieces of good advice, but you're able to help us bridge a gap by giving us some practical ways to implement some of these pieces of good advice.
Yeah, correct, Kenneth. My work essentially is what I would refer to as skill-based. And some coaches are more motivational-based or inspirational-based. I was kind of trained in it that people need to leave with something practical. So even in writing the book, I thought about, how can I write a handbook? How could I write a helpful guide for people that they could use, that they could find it practical? You know, there are many, many wonderful books that are available within the personal development and the self-help and pop psychology world. And, I mean, I even acknowledge some of them that have helped me along the way. but I really attempted to lay out this internal operating system, and in a number of sections, there are exercises for people to do. So that there's actual tools and tips and techniques. For example, in one of the first sections, there is a chapter on core beliefs. And our core beliefs are at a very deep part of us.
Those
are, you know, a core belief, as I'm sure you know, is that which I believe to be true about myself and the world that I live in. Now, it may not be true, but I believe it to be true, and therefore it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it will ultimately affect how I behave. So people always ask me, well, how do I get in touch with those core beliefs? And I say, well, there's a wonderful exercise that I've done with executives and I've done with groups of people, and I suggested in the book that it can be done as an individual, and that is to sit down and either do this with another person in your life or a group of people over a dinner and tell us about the important people, places, and events from your life that have contributed to who you are right now. And so, Kenneth, if I did it with you, I would say you're only allowed 5 minutes.
Okay.
So if you could only have 5 minutes, and given the richness of your life, what would you choose to tell in terms of who were the people, the places, and the events that really contributed to you? And by you telling your story, we, meaning the listener, but also you, can get a sense of some deep core beliefs that you have about yourself.
Ah, okay. Now I'm curious in this question because that's a kind of a broad context, because I could when I would answer that, or a person would answer that, they could access a range. In other words, someone influenced me tremendously because they may have hurt me deeply. And at one range, it's almost like at one end of that spectrum would be, well, the worst things that happened to you that made the biggest impression on your life. And the other end of the spectrum could be the people that added the most beauty, love, joy to your life.
Correct.
Kind of a thing. And so you leave it open-ended for a purpose?
I leave it open-ended for a purpose, and the purpose is then, at some point after that exercise, is to start to look at which of those beliefs is continuing to serve you, and which of those beliefs is no longer serving you. In other words, exactly. In other words, you may have heard the expression, you know, there's a payoff.
Yeah.
But there's also a cost of holding on to a belief. So, for example, I share mine in the book. And what I've done in the book is, as I take people through this operating system, which goes from your core beliefs, which then contribute to your values, which then affects your attitude, which produces your thoughts and feelings, which then presents you with choices, which ultimately then become behavior, I set out, you know, small chapters on each section, and there's exercises in the core belief. There's a value clarification exercise in the book where you can really clarify what is most important to you. There are exercises in how to manage your self-talk, you know, that little voice that's constantly talking to us.
Oh, I mean, so people only have one of them?
And that's a big discussion. So in terms of, I use myself as an example. So
yes.
Somebody said, well, why don't you use, you know, clients, or talk about, you know, John so-and-so or Barbara so-and-so. And I thought, you know, I wanted to personalize it. So let me give you an example of a core belief that could have both a negative aspect to it, but could also have a positive aspect. When I was 8 years old and I took my first mathematics test, growing up in Long Island in New York. And I remember I got a 98 out of 100, and I was so proud of myself. And I got the highest score in the class, and I couldn't wait to run home to tell, you know, my family. So 3 o'clock comes, the school bell rings, and I run home from school, and I burst into my home saying, Ma, guess what? I got a 98 on my math test. And she looked at me very calmly, and she said, how come you didn't get 100? Exactly. Now, no. That little boy, that little 8-year-old boy, took that message as not quite good enough, son. And then I turned it into, I'm not quite good enough. And then I even turned it further into, I'm not enough. And so essentially, I became an overachiever because I was now trying harder, working harder, and basically learning to perform for love because I just wanted that acceptance.
Yeah.
Now, Kenneth, I can't tell you how many executives, CEOs, senior vice presidents, very successful people in the corporate world, when I tell them that story, they look at me and they say, the same thing happened to me. And so the positive aspect of that is that those of us that are driven to success sometimes are driven from a feeling of being less than. And so it manifests as a positive because we always strive for excellence. But at some point, you realize, or I realized, that I couldn't even enjoy the success that I was having in my life.
Because at least some, in my case, there's these times where no matter how good it gets, it could always be better.
And it's another version of it, exactly.
And so we can't quite enjoy it yet because, well, geez, even if I got 100, there must have been something else I could have done to make it even better.
That's right. So it becomes almost insidious and those kinds of beliefs. Now, that same parent, where I got that core belief from, also told me, I remember my mother telling me that you can make a difference in this world. No matter what you do, your presence and your contribution is going to make a difference. And so that was a very positive core belief. So I think, as you said before, you know, we probably have more than one voice talking to us. I think that we have more than one core belief that is functioning at a very deep level as to who we are. And it is affecting all the choices that we make and the behaviors that we have in our life.
So if I'm understanding correctly, an individual that gets a copy of your book called Behavior Change, A View from the Inside Out, they can be guided to discover and be able to get acquainted with themselves in a powerful way about core beliefs. Because if you go to someone, like a person, we could all, you know, if we weren't sure, we could go to a therapist and for somewhere between whatever, 50, 100, 200 an hour somewhere, they could help us to get in touch with our core beliefs. So we could spend hundreds of dollars to have this process accomplished for us. And what's the price of your book?
The price of the book is $12.95, and on Amazon they're selling it for a little more than $10.
Huh.
So.
Wow. So what do we do with all that extra money that we saved on therapy now?
Well, that's a good question. What that does is, what you're saying is, now you'll be presented with new choices.
Okay.
In other words, if I can learn something, you know, it's interesting that you say that. By the way, just so your readers know it, the book is about 90 pages long. It can be read in an hour to an hour and a half. And my intention was to write a small book with a big message. because there are so much wonderful pieces of writing that are available. But as I handed my book to an executive that I worked with at IBM this past Wednesday in New York, he smiled and he turned to everybody in the room. He said, "Now this is the kind of book that I like." Because he said, "Honestly, I don't have the time to read a 300-page book."
Uh-huh.
Or a 400-page book. He says, "As much as I would love to," he said, "my life is such that I don't have the time." He said, "So I look for books that are simple, that have a good, strong message, but that the writer just says it and says it clearly." And so that was my intention. And so what your listeners and hopefully potential readers can look forward to is something that really is concise, and it deals with something that can be very complex, you know, which is our core beliefs and our values and how we talk to ourselves. And I've tried to do it in what I would call a profoundly simple way.
Ah, well, we need that more than ever, because the world, most of us are noticing, geez, it's getting pretty complex.
It's getting very complex.
And so, I love the beginning of your in the beginning of your book, you pull together a very profound statement from Ralph Waldo Emerson. This is great. It says here, this is one of my favorites of his: "What lies behind you, our past; what lies in front of you, our future, pales in comparison to what lies inside of you."
Mm-hmm. Kenneth, I think I'm going to take you on my book tour and like have you read that quote. You did it so well.
Well, thank you. I'm just excited for what you're doing, and that myself and my listeners can take advantage of something in times that where we need some way to sort through things, and of course, the most important thing that you're reminding us is managing ourselves internally, so that there's that old Rudyard Kipling poem: "If you can keep your head while those about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you." So here's some profound work that you're offering. Thank you.
you're very, very welcome, and I really, really feel, you know, very aligned with what you just said, in that I think more than ever we as individuals are looking for a sense of fulfillment, and we're looking for a deep sense of satisfaction. And I think we've looked, to a great extent, outside of ourselves. You know, we've looked to the world, we've looked to things, we've looked to wealth, we've looked to careers. And I think, you know, sometimes in the last place to look is, you know, like Paulo Coelho writes about in The Alchemist, you know, the young boy who goes off searching for his great treasure. And in the end, he finds out that it lies within himself. And I think that's the key to being successful and to being fulfilled in this life, no matter what position we find ourselves, no matter what career we find ourselves in. And
yeah.
It's interesting, Kenneth, you know, that the higher up an organization that an individual is, that I get a chance to work with, the less they want to talk about skills and the more they really want to talk about, so what does it all really mean? You know, after they've gotten to that place where they're very successful and they've made...
My goodness. I think we may have lost that connection to Hank for some reason. That's a surprise. And he was right in the middle. Are you back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. The voice paused for a moment. And so it allowed me to muse whimsically for there until your voice came back.
Oh, okay. Where did you lose me?
Well, you were there giving us some insights, and would you go ahead and, you know, kind of pick up from about a minute ago because we've,
sure,
we've had a
sure.
cool
was,
gap in there.
No problem. What I was mentioning was that the in my work as an executive coach, many times I'm working with very high-level executives, and I find that the higher up in the organization that they get, the less they're interested in talking about skills of management and the more interested in skills of life in terms of what does it really all mean. And so even though they may not be an actively, let's say, spiritual seeker, there's a part of them that wants to have the conversation about, now that I've accomplished all of this, what I've accomplished as an executive, where, and I'm still not fulfilled. And I'm still not.
Yeah. Ah. Boy. So now, until Hank gets back, we can ask ourselves, here's some powerful people that have risen in the corporate arena, and after they've got all this success, they are pondering to themselves, well, what's it all mean? And we have an opportunity with Hank's book. If you go to hankfeiger.com, hankfeiger.com, you have an opportunity there, or to Amazon to get a copy of the book so that you can be guided at a pace that's right for you, to be able to look at and evaluate core beliefs, the whole range of them, from ones that serve you very much, or supporting your life to move it ahead and bringing things that you want to you, and core beliefs that are really getting in the way of you getting what you want. And then to go from that into the sequence. Did you make it back yet, Hank? Okay. To go to from your core beliefs, to see the linkage to that, to your values, to your attitudes, linking values and attitudes into your thoughts and feelings, and from those places how those flow into the choices that we make, and from the choices that we make into our behaviors. So this is quite exciting, to have all of this brought together in a simple. Executives love it because it's quick and easy. Hour and a half read book. And it would take a little longer, if I'm understanding, for you to do some of these exercises. But if I understand from talking to Hank, you can take as long as you need to move through this and get the time, and get little pieces. So in the midst of a busy life, you can still have a chance to have some wonderful things take place. Well, this is exciting. I am really, really appreciative of this, and not quite sure what happened to Hank in all of our conversation. So hopefully we can actually connect in here. So let me see what we can do. And hello? Are we back on the air? My goodness. Well, dear listeners, I will have to see if I can, on another phone line, connect in with the other part of the station so that we can get some of this sorted through, because it's so important to be able to do this correctly so we get the value that Hank has to offer. So...
Let go of it.